My name is Brian Gerrish. I work with the UK column alongside Mike Robinson and David Scott. We've been producing, well, initially a newspaper, but that was several years ago. We now produce an online news broadcast, which is Monday, Wednesday and Friday on the UK column site. So I work now as a journalist. I'm also doing a lot of work with people who've been a bit hurt by the system. So I can also say in some ways I seem to be doing a bit of counselling work as well. But my background for my professional career for 21 years is I was a naval officer. I was a warfare officer and I was working during the Cold War years. And my job was to find Russian nuclear submarines. I was not a submariner. I was a surface ship man, but our job was to go out there and track down those nasty Russian nuclear submarines.
Yeah, sounds like a job on a destroyer. But anyway, we're here to talk a bit about common purpose, Brian, because I know this is something that you picked up on years ago, that there was this organization that was choosing tomorrow's leaders. Now, as I understand it, in a democracy, leaders emerge because they show leadership qualities in civil society, or possibly even a similar thing goes on within the military. And then people get promoted because either of their aptitude, their courage or whatever in the civil life, that should happen as well as in military. So what does the role of common purpose take in this, in actually giving us leaders, choosing leaders for us?
Well, I'm going to say with a lot of hindsight now, because I was looking into common purpose way back in about 2002-03, that sort of era, maybe a little bit before that. And you're quite right. Common purpose as a charitable organisation said and still says that it's selecting and training really future. It calls them future leaders. And many years ago, I got interested that there was this charitable organization recruiting and then putting potential future leaders through its particular training program. There were a number of courses. One of them was called Just Do It. There was another one called the Matrix course. These were not cheap courses. Way back then, they were charging about about £3,750 plus VAT to do one of the Matrix courses. So this was not a cheap course, but you couldn't see them on the surface. They were recruiting people under I'll call it the visible surface. So they were recruiting people inside the police, inside the fire service, inside local authorities, some people inside the military, even certainly in the NHS, and certainly right through the civil service. And then they also migrated into the bigger, more influential companies like PricewaterhouseCoopers, etc. And what they were producing was a network of their trained people who would interface and use the networks between them in order to advance common purposes agenda and also, in many cases, their own personal agenda. What I can say with hindsight now is it's very clear that what common purpose was then was a Trojan horse in order to get its, I'm going to call it political agenda, because I think this is a political charity, to get its particular political agenda into any organisation it possibly could. Because once it had got its people inside, it could steer that organisation to following its desired agenda for changing society.
Well, I mean, you've described there a whole load of basically public bodies. And if it does have a political agenda, what is that political agenda?
I think that's very clear now. The key political agenda of common purpose is to change the world, to change society. So the reason I can say to change the world is because when I first looked at common purpose, principally it was operating in the UK, but now it's operating in Europe, it's in India, it's in Australia, I'm pretty sure I can say now. So it's really migrated out from the UK. It's talking about changing society, getting people to come out of what it calls their silos. And what that really means is getting everybody interlinked. And then this is where it gets interesting. It constantly talks about change, but sometimes they're not very clear on what that change is. And I think that's because they don't really want us to understand the world that they're building.
So we have in Bristol, we have the two major mayor candidates in this May 2021 local election, both of whom certainly, you know, it's very difficult to pin down and get evidence, but anecdotally, I've had a very good contact of mine say that Sandy Hoare Rutherford, the Green candidate, he told him to his face that he was part of Common Purpose, and in fact he was encouraging them to get involved. The way that it works is, and I'm sure you'll agree, Brian, is that some people will be paying for these courses. Others, they get tapped up and they get told, well, if you can't afford it, you can get a bursary to do this course. So anyway, Sandy is somebody that only joined the Green Party shortly before he got picked as their mayor candidate last year for the elections that never happened. In fact, I think it was even the year before that he was chosen for the mayor candidate. And also Marvin Rees. Several people have told me that they've been on courses with Marvin Rees. I don't think there's really much doubt about whether he, the Labour candidate. So we're in a situation where, which is rather like the rather depressing politics we get in the West nowadays, where, and in fact, it's probably quite similar in China, actually, where you're looking at various candidates and you're thinking, well, actually, I'm going to have to vote here for the lesser of two or three or four evils, where the candidates, none of them are particularly appealing. They all seem to be kind of a part of some kind of establishment. Anyway, can you just explain what it means if you've got a couple of major candidates? I mean, we on the, obviously in the national elections, we'd be talking here about a leader of the Labour Party and Conservative Party that were both Common Purpose. It sort of seems to me that there is a diminution of choice going on here and an undermining of democracy if these people are not declaring this as an interest, because many of them don't, do they?
Well, in my experience, most of them don't. And if you challenge them as being Common Purpose when they don't expect to be challenged, you can see some very strange responses, because they can look very shocked and they can behave in a strange way, which I will talk about a bit more. I think it's fair for me to say, Tony, that I do not know whether the two gentlemen you're talking about are Common Purpose or not. I'm happy to accept what you're saying that they are, and I'll comment on that basis, but I do not hold evidence they are. But the key thing about Common Purpose is that Common Purpose approaches the individual to see whether they will come on to the training. And they will do this if they've already got control of an organisation. What I found deeply disturbing in the early days was that Common Purpose would have got hold of somebody. Let's take a local authority. They were particularly interested in the first instance of getting somebody in a local authority who had control of the budget. And they were particularly interested in people who controlled training. And the reason for that was that if they could get their foot in the door and get somebody who controlled training, they could then use that person to effectively pull levers, open doors, so that more of that organisation were passed through to Common Purpose training. If they had somebody who was friendly to them, or indeed a Common Purpose graduate who was in control of budgets, that person could pay for the training out of the public purse. Many years ago, we started a website called CP Exposed, exposed.com. It's still there. I haven't been able to update it over many years, but nevertheless, there's still very good information on that site, because you can search it through a database and you can look at documents to do with the police or local authorities, And you can see the letters that we were able, the letters and the documents we were able to get hold of, which showed them doing this wheeling and dealing in order to use public money to train people as future leaders when that training was not declared to the public. And if I take Plymouth City Council, because I'm local to the Plymouth area, I had to do freedom of information requests to actually get the council to even admit this training was going on. And that was usually the pattern. If you made a simple request for information, it was blocked because Common Purpose overwhelmingly operated in a secretive way so that it would be inside a network and you didn't know it was there. The best example I can give of this was Devon and Cornwall Police, who I knew for a fact that Common Purpose was operating inside. I sent them a freedom of information request asking for details of the people and how much money they'd spent on Common Purpose. And I eventually got a letter from their freedom of information lady saying she couldn't find any information inside the police. Well, this was really excellent because I then sent her a letter with some names of police officers that I knew had been trained by Common Purpose. And then she was able to go around inside the headquarters and ask, and then she could provide me with the information. And if people want to check me on that, they can find those documents on CP Exposed. So this is the really devious thing about the organisation. It buried itself into a particular company or an organisation. And then once it had got inside, those people networked and communicated with other Common Purpose people inside the organisation or Common Purpose people in other organisations. And in many cases, of course, this immediately produced a conflict of interest because a lot of people throw a lot of accusations at the Masonic system for the fact that people are undeclared Freemasons, and this gives them an advantage. You think you're dealing with one person, but in fact that person is using their Masonic links. Well, Common Purpose effectively mimics that system, except it calls itself a charity, which I always found was really unpleasant. So that's how it works. How many people are we talking about? Well, way back in 2005, it was boasting that it had trained 85,000 people in UK. Again, if you go to that cpexposed.com website, there's a searchable database of graduates where you can see the names and their position, their work job in the NHS, in the police, in the fire service, in schools, in the Crown Prosecution Service even. And you can see the vast spread right the way across society. And not declared, the average person would not know. And therefore, the first thing you've got is a breakdown in the separation of powers. But also you've got, I call it a political agenda. Other people might not agree, but a change agenda being driven through organizations by these graduates who never declared themselves openly to other people.
I think one of the questions will be in people's minds, Brian, is we're constantly here talking about Common Purpose, but what is the Common Purpose?
Well, I for me, when you look at all the things they're involved with, the first thing is change. Now, if you say to me, Brian, that's not very specific, my answer is precisely. The agenda that Common Purpose has driven from the earliest days is to take the existing system in society, the way people work, the way people interface between different organizations or even within their organization, and to start to change that. Now, that change, we might say this is okay, but to say that, we would have to know what the change is and why it was happening. But Common Purpose never really declared that. If I look at all the data I can see around Common Purpose, I look at their talks, I look at things that are published on their sites, they are creating a network of what they openly call future leaders, and these people are to lead change in society in any country that they're operating.
Well, I mean, of course, the problem with this is that this could be an agenda going in any direction, really, into the future. In fact, that change that may have happened 5 or 6 years ago may be a completely new change. And if these people, as we suspect, are pliable, and that may be one of the reasons why they've been selected, because they believe that they're pliable individuals, they can be steered almost in any direction they want. So what we end up with there is a sort of a hidden power network, really, where people in all sorts of key positions can be all steered almost in lockstep in one direction 1 year, 6 months later in a different direction.
That is absolutely correct. And because I've, in all the years I've been looking at this organization, I have always based my research on real documents. And as I say, on the website cpexposed.com, a huge amount of data on common purpose. When we found, for example, that quite a senior police officer was being told by common purpose what he was to do in order to set up a meeting, you immediately had to ask questions. And I'm not just making this up, because what we saw time and time again, Common Purpose operated where they had senior people inside the charity Common Purpose. You would have a chief executive. For much of the time I looked at them, it was a lady called Julia Middleton, but divided out regionally across the country, there were other Common Purpose people working directly for the charity. They interfaced with what they called the Common Purpose Advisory Board. And in every major city, they would set up a Common Purpose Advisory Board of what they called senior Common Purpose people. And those people would look to identify, draw in, and engage and train more Common Purpose graduates. And I come back to the to when you saw that Common Purpose as a charity was telling a police officer what was going to happen in order to run this meeting, in order to engage more graduates. Well, the first thing you should ask yourself is, who's paying for this? Because if the policeman is using his time for Common Purpose, he's not using public money to police the country.
Well, I'm reminded of a situation when we went on a tour of the Bristol Masonic Hall at the bottom of Park Street a few years ago, where was one of the city's senior magistrates was a sort of a little sentry being ordered around by one of the senior masons. So, you know, when you've got this sort of crossover of, almost like a Venn diagram of civil society organisations with common purpose secretly interlinking, then somebody may be a senior in one organisation, but nobody in the other organisation realises where they're taking their orders from and where their loyalties lie. I did a little bit of investigating myself, Brian, in the Southwest, and I found that their headquarters in the Southwest of England, Common Purpose, was at Lee Court. I went round there recently, and there's no nameplates on the doors anymore. And that doesn't mean to say they're not still there. But Lee Court is the headquarters of Business West, which was the people who've been privatising much of our local authorities, doing these partnership deals, etc. Do you think it's significant that the Common Purpose offices in the Southwest were, at least then, next door to the business community?
Completely significant, because Common Purpose as a charity overwhelmingly operated in the grey interface between quangos and business communities. So again, I'll go back to when I really started to get a feel for how this organisation was working. And in those days, we had some really amazing quangos. We had the Southwest of England Regional Development Agency. We had the Government of the South of the Southwest, and they were handing out grant money like confetti, mainly coming from the European Union, and a whole load of things were feeding off that. I knew quite a lot about this because I spent some time on the board of Plymouth Chamber of Commerce, so I could see some of this happening around me. And Common Purpose got itself in the middle of this cesspit of funding money that was being used to fund more of these strange little charities and quango-y type organizations. And when you said, well, what are these people doing? The minimum they seem to be doing is interfering with normal life. Wherever things were stable, you saw a sudden build-up of common purpose activity and these other little charity-type things, social companies sometimes, linked into the Southwest of England Regional Development Agency or the Government Office Southwest. And then you started to see things falling apart or changing in a way that was not necessarily very positive.
Well, I think most people will recognize they've seen much of our civil society doing exactly that, crumbling. I mean, you know, what you seem to be alleging there is that this could, and this sort of network could be used as a kind of fifth column.
Oh, I have described it as a fifth column. And sorry, you're making me laugh. The reason I'm laughing is that the chief executive, as was a lady called Julia Middleton, wrote a book. The title will come into my mind in a minute. But in that book, she actually talked about a fifth column. She talked about how you got your agenda through, and she talked to various people. And on one page, she's talking about steamrolling over the opposition, ridiculing them, pushing them aside. So when I read this book, I thought that this book was very aggressive in the way it was dealing with other people. And
well, let me just say, because I know she's done a book, I don't know if it's the one you're talking about, called Beyond Authority.
Yes, thank you. It just dropped out of my head. That is the book. And in it, you get this extraordinary mixture of stuff, because very early on in it, she's praising bankers. In particular, she praises East German bankers. Now, I paid attention to that because one of the things I was always interested in is who paid for the setup of Common Purpose. And Common Purpose themselves never declared that, although in several documents that I saw, Julia Middleton referred to the tremendous help they got from banks and financial institutions who were never named. One of the organizations I know for a fact strongly supported Common Purpose was Deutsche Bank. And I always was fascinated at how can you possibly say I met with bankers and these people had amazing ideas for changing society. I'm sorry to be a bit ruthless here, but high-level bankers earning millions and millions of pounds a year, I don't see any good ideas for helping the ordinary man or woman on the street. And yet these organizations had helped to fund Common Purpose into existence. This was one of the key trails where I began to feel deeply uncomfortable about this organization.
Well, it certainly is worrying. I mean, of course, you know, people like Deutsche Bank, most people would describe them, and in fact, many journalists would describe them as banksters rather than bankers, with the money laundering, et cetera, that's been going on. And actually, the fact that Deutsche Bank itself has been teetering on the brink, basically on the edge of a cliff, ready to take everybody with it at any time because of the criminality that's been going on. But anyway, with Marvin Rees, the incumbent Labour mayor, who's managed to get his little free year because of COVID without being elected, we know that he is one of the Yale World Fellows. He was basically tapped up, sent to the United States, to Yale, which is the headquarters of the Skull and Bones Society, one of the most notorious secret power groups in the world, started by the Russell Trust and the money from the opium trade in Hong Kong originally. But what do you know about the Yale World Fellows Program? It does sound a little bit similar to being tapped up by these top Common Purpose types.
Well, I can't say the link is there, but I would say that when I've looked at organizations like Yale and how they're training people, I could believe that it is that caliber of person from an organization like Yale World Fellows that has actually helped create organizations like Common Purpose. I don't believe the Common Purpose story, which is that Julia Middleton was in America and she met some tremendous people who were looking at how to change society. And And she came back to England, went to talk to some bankers. They gave her what was clearly a lot of money. And then Common Purpose was set up. I do not believe a word of that story. I think that the serious powers in the world, and that's a mixture of bankers and these very, very powerful think tanks and organizations, are the people that set up Common Purpose.
What about this, just this whole idea that someone can be chosen as a leader rather than emerge? I mean, that seems to be to grate with me.
Well, it certainly grates with me. And I can smile on this one, because in the early days, Common Purpose actually had a go at recruiting me. They came to visit me in my office. A young lady, very nice young lady, sort of intimated that my name had been mentioned and I was trying to do some interesting things in Plymouth, which I was, because I had a little project at that time trying to help one of the deprived communities that had a lot of unemployment. So she was very flattering in remarks, and eventually produced this very glossy brochure. And I was interested to see the names on the then advisory, the Common Purpose Advisory Board in Plymouth, because I had reason to believe that some of those eminent people were up to what I would regard as maybe no good. I've got to be a little bit careful where I go with that. But I was seeing deals done in the city where I think some questions had to be asked. And I found it very interesting when I followed the trail through. And I found that the link between a lot of these people came through their Common Purpose connections. And I was even more interested when I found that people who were in the Chamber of Commerce at that time were Common Purpose trained. I might sit next to them in a meeting and I had no idea that they were Common Purpose graduates. So, a very devious organisation, and their networks were capable of really skewing a lot of normal interaction and relationship between businesses and the local authority.
I mean, you're not the only person that's drawn parallels with Freemasonry, Brian.
Well, I'm not, but something I'm going to say is that I've been over the years, not so much in recent years, but if I go back sort of 3 or 4 years, I started to be contacted by people who would openly declare to me they were Freemasons. That why did they want to talk to me? They wanted to talk to me because they had discovered Common Purpose operating in their area. And they said, we're having big problems, because you could look at it in a sort of fairly black and white way and say it was like a turf war going on. The Common Purpose was beginning to override some of the Masonic networks and the Freemasons were getting upset. But if you take their information as being useful information, which it certainly was, they were telling me that Common Purpose was a lot more powerful and dangerous than I thought it was. And I well remember having a very long conversation with a man who was a pretty senior Freemason in Scotland. And he said to me, Brian, this organization is virtually controlling the Scottish establishment. He told me some amazing information, and it was clear that he'd been doing a lot of research. Now, something I want to add into this is he was one of the people, but there's been many other. I started to be contacted by people who were trained in psychology. And what they said to me is, Brian, do you understand that Common Purpose, when it's doing its training, is reframing people? I didn't understand what they meant. One man produced me a little analytical video clip showing some of the Common Purpose training. And he said what they're doing is using very, very sophisticated applied psychology in order to get their ideas through into their graduates. And this, many, many people point at NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. This is not a joke. It's not silly. It's a real technique, using language in a particular way in order to get your message into somebody's mind when they don't really know. And I have had probably 10 well-qualified people, including NLP people or psychiatrists or psychologists, saying to me that they were very sure that these techniques were being used. And what do these techniques mean? That you could be sat in a classroom and ideas are put in your head, you don't actually know how they got there. So these if this is correct, and I have a lot of reason to believe it's correct, then this is very, very dangerous stuff.
Yeah, well, NLP is used, isn't it, to get people to trust the person. So this is various, visual cues, etc. It's a form of subtle, sort of almost unconscious hypnosis. Anyway, fascinating stuff, Brian. I hope the Bristolians will not vote for common purpose candidates, although it doesn't look as if we're going to have much of a choice in the forthcoming mayoral elections. But anyway, how do people best follow your work online, Brian?
Well, we'd love people to take a look at our main website, which is UK Column. Well, that's all one word, UK Column, ukcolumn.org. We do that live news 3 times a week, Monday, Wednesday and Friday. There's also articles and other videos there. You'll find us on YouTube and a load of other places. And as I say, if people really want to start investigating common purpose, go and have a look at CP Exposed. That's all lowercase, cpexposed.com. And you'll find you can search for documents for the police or the NHS. And you can also find a database of graduates to give you an idea of how they covered the UK with their people.
Yeah, well, the trouble is, though, of course, how do we find out if somebody is now common purpose? Is it covered by freedom of information legislation? Can we actually demand to know from common purpose who their current graduates are?
Well, you can demand to know from authorities that are paid by public money. You can absolutely demand that. And usually they will tell you how much has been spent on common purpose training, but usually the authority will try and hide the names from you. So the only way you can really find out whether people are common purpose is to ask them. And what I was getting at by saying you can get a weird effect if you're talking about some topic, pick something you're talking about, you went out for a nice walk the other day, and then you run into it, are you common purpose? So you introduce the question, are you common purpose, completely unexpectedly and out of context. You can see some very strange reactions, stuttering, or people stepping back from you because it's like you've really shocked them. And I believe that this is because they are taught, whether they know that or not, that they don't actually deny it, but they don't advertise it. If you catch them out by asking, you can sometimes really unsettle them. But the only way you can know is by demanding to know. And we should know if public money has been used to pay for common purpose training.
Yeah, we certainly should. Neither confirm nor deny, programmed into them. Thank you very much, Brian Gerrish.
Thank you.